What do the following have in common? Antibiotics for kids' middle ear infections, imaging for non-specific lower back pain, and colonoscopies to screen for bowel cancer. They've all made it onto a list of unnecessary tests and treatments drawn up by Australia's peak medical bodies. In fact, the NPS Choosing Wisely campaign has just added no fewer than 61 routine practices that are not only useless, but in some cases, they argue, potentially harmful. Dr. Frank Jones is the president of the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. 61 is a very significant number. Why are medical professionals prescribing so many unnecessary tests and treatments?
Hi, thanks, Patricia. Well, look, that's a great question. I think modern technology and modern science has really catapulted us, you know, the last 25 to 30 years into more technology, more science, and wonderful things that we can achieve. But sometimes, just sometimes, it's good to take a breath in and have a look to see, is this the appropriate test? Is this the appropriate treatment? Because really, we have to do this in conjunction with our patients because we're taking them on the journey. You know, the old days, the doctor being a paternalistic doctor, thank goodness, has gone. I now see my patients in my practice day to day, and we are partners in care together. So it's really about having a conversation with your doctor as well as the consultation. So it's really empowering patients that really we need to decide on each and every step of any pathway in any illness. Is this test necessary? Is this treatment necessary?
Isn't this a message really for doctors, not patients? Because it's the doctors coming up with these ideas, isn't it?
No, I think that it's not, because I think this is an evolution that is happening just now. It's about bringing patients on the journey. I mean, if you come and see me as a patient, it's about what's best for you as an individual. And we will discuss the pros and cons of any relevant symptoms you may have and any relevant tests. So I think it's an evolutionary journey because, as I say, the day of the paternalistic doctor, thank goodness he's gone. It's about really talking to our patients and bringing them along on their journey, not our journey.
So what practices, given you've listed 61, but what practices are you most concerned about?
Well, it's very hard to pin it down to one. And all the medical colleges, indeed all the health colleges, including physiotherapy, pharmacy and the nursing profession, have been involved in this as well. So it's great that we're all working together to try and actually improve the quality of care that we can provide for our patients. Now, my college, the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, have come up with 5 recommendations. And I'm happy to talk to each and every one, but you mentioned a couple on the way there, one about colonoscopy, and I think you also mentioned antibiotics. So I'm happy to talk whichever one you'd like to ask me about.
Well, let's start with colonoscopies, because that one really is there to detect something pretty serious, to screen for bowel cancer. It's something that, I've got to say, instinctively, I have zero medical training, but instinctively I think it makes sense.
Sure. Look, a colonoscopy is a procedure that is given under a light anaesthetic whereby a telescope is inserted via the anus to look at the whole bowel. Bowel cancer is, in fact, the commonest internal cancer in Australia, so it's a major issue for all Australians, that's for sure. What we are saying in our recommendations is that everybody over the age of 50 should have two yearly stool tests done to see whether they're at risk of bowel cancer or not. And if the test is negative, then you can be pretty reassured that you do not require a colonoscopy. If it's positive, you may or may not, depending on your conversation with your doctor. Now, this precludes people who have a strong family history, first-degree relative who has had bowel cancer, or obviously people who have symptoms like bleeding from the gut, bleeding in the bowel, etc. Those people obviously require a colonoscopy. So a colonoscopy is an invasive procedure, and it's not without side effects. Again, so the indications should be very clear and very individualised.
And you argue that they also can be potentially harmful. What's harmful? What is potentially harmful in this list?
Well, in a colonoscopy, for example, there is a recognised risk rate. For example, from the anaesthetic that you may have to have, but there's a very small risk of damage to the bowel itself when you're putting this telescope and having a look all the way around the bowel. So these tests are not without risk. So they have to be apportioned to that patient and what that patient needs. And also the risk that patient has. So you have to balance things always in medicine as in life.
And what is the cost of these unnecessary tests and treatments? Because, of course, the priority should always be on health management and outcomes there. But there is, if they're unnecessary, the cost to the taxpayer must be quite enormous.
Look, as a doctor, my prime interest, of course, is in good clinical outcomes for all my patients. Some of the recommendations that have been made by many colleges today will certainly improve the cost efficiency of the health system. Now, I can't give you exact figures, but there's no question it will improve the cost efficiency of the health system.
Has it been modelled, though? You say it will undoubtedly lead to improvements in the budget and bottom line, but is it modelled?
As far as colonoscopy is concerned, I think that there are some figures out there, and I can't give you exact figures at the moment, but we know that if you don't do X number of colonoscopies, A, you will be cost efficient, but also you'll bring people who really need it up the waiting list and get them done a bit quicker.
It begs the obvious question, isn't there a chance that in reducing the number of tests and treatments that we prescribe, that something may go undiagnosed or unnoticed? That is the risk with this, isn't it?
Well, I think like everything in life, it's a balance. You have to balance the risks of a procedure or a treatment or a medication, for example, against its consequent side effects. And again, this is a personal decision that you have to have a conversation with your doctor about. I mean, some doctors, and we've talked about this over the years, because of the litigious society that we live in, tend to practice, if you like, defensive medicine. Look, I don't like the word defensive medicine. I think you have to practice the best medicine for your patient.
Just lastly, we're running out of time, but this message on antibiotics is an interesting one. There's other more significant things you raise, but are you getting that message out there on antibiotic resistance?
Yeah, look, I think I'll be very brief. I think that we have a worldwide problem with antibiotic resistance. Both doctors, patients, society in general, and our government have to take ownership of this. We really have to have stewardship of antibiotics, because in 20, 30 years' time, potentially, we could be left with no antibiotics, and then when you have a severe infection, you really are in trouble. So there are lots of recommendations in and around the antibiotic prescribing from the recommendation from various medical colleges today. Ours has been in and around middle ear infections with antibiotics. In fact, very briefly, if you have a well child of a non-Indigenous race aged between 2 and 12, there really is little evidence that antibiotics make any difference at all to pain.
Thank you so much for joining us. And that's Dr. Frank Jones, President of the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, joining us here on RN Drive.